With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
It's the My First Gig Podcast. Whoa. Sharing stories of first gigs and shows. Comedians sharing their memories. The fun and entertaining, exciting and crazy. With Dwayne Dugan as your host. It's the My First Gig Podcast. Here we go.
Wake up, it's a beautiful morning. Wake up, it's a beautiful morning. Wake up, it's a beautiful morning. That's not the tune. Hello and welcome to My First Gig with me, Dwayne Dugan. I sang the Boo Radley's tribute there, Wake Up, because I just assumed everyone's listening to this in the morning. Is it the morning? Who knows? One thing I'll know is, it's a Monday morning. If you're listening on patreon.com/myfirstgigpod, getting it before all the other losers. Yeah, losers have to wait around, and guess what? They don't even hear the full podcast. The full podcast is only on Patreon, so welcome. If this is Wednesday, though, don't listen to what I said about calling you losers. You're actually my favourite. What a way to get over hump day. This podcast has it all. How are we, guys? I hope you enjoyed last week. Last week, fantastic episode with Mary Beth Barone. I'm not watching. If you're watching on YouTube, I'm not watching the video bit. Like the little icon that says look here, so that my eyes are looking at the viewer like I am now. Hello. I'm looking at myself, so I'm getting quite performative. So that's why I'm like, Mary Beth Barone, as if I have to dance around and say it. If you didn't hear it, go back and listen. I've been really, really enjoying the season three. So have an El Gander if you haven't. If you've just jumped in because you're a fan of Paul Smith, if you've been watching his clips from the Hot Water Comedy Club. Just a real force in stand-up comedy in the new age, I think. The way the UK is concerned, it's hard to beat their output. Like, you know, that's why Paul can come. We recorded this at the Olympia Theatre, and that's why Paul can come and do two solid shows at the Olympia Theatre to, like, a variety of ages of people. So it's not just, like, young people who like going to stand-up shows. These are, you know, there's some older people who have just discovered him on the internet, you know, which is quite ageist of me to just find that weird. Of course, old people use the internet. They're mad for their puzzles and their news, and hopefully their podcasts. Hey, are you out there? You big boiled meat heads. Love yous. Love boiled meat. Who doesn't? But let's stop not cooking our sausages in a coddle. That's weird. Great season so far. And then Paul is one that we recorded just before lockdown. I think it was March. I think it was early March 2020. It was meant to be going into the season two, which became the isolation interviews. So it's been a while. So glad to finally put this out. I mentioned Paul doing two nights at the Olympia. It could have been three nights. And then he goes home and he goes, oh, I'm coming back this year with the tour. I think Changed was the name of the tour. He's on tour now with his show Joker, coming back again to the Olympia Theatre. Oh, well, no, he didn't actually get to come back because the world shut down. But, yeah, he'll be back. Yeah, I was thinking of what to talk about for this opening, and I went for October 12th, which is the official release date, if you're listening to this early or later. And I basically, nothing really interesting happened on October 12th. Let's see, 1600s, no, fuck that, I wasn't around. Let's go to the 70s and higher. The European Union wins the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize. Not very noble if the whole European Union is winning it. That's the quality of jokes I'm delivering right now. It's all just death and, like, not happy deaths. Not that there is happy deaths. That's just a weird sentence. But, like, they're horrific deaths. It's not just like, oh, somebody died. We're sad. But this is like, oh, no, these people were murdered for really bad things. There was an earthquake. 5.8 earthquake occurred. Oh, at least 510 died. I was going to go, oh, whoa, natural things. But no, yeah, people had to die. This is not a good opening banter. Oh, well, here's a funny one. The Hard Rock Hotel in New Orleans. Oh, I was going to say that it opened. I was like, why is that on Wikipedia as an event? It's on here as an event because it collapsed and killed. Right, let's stop talking about the deaths. Let's talk about the births. Who was born? Who was born in the 1600s? I don't know them. Right, who was born on October 12th? Hugh Jackman, Australian actor, singer, and producer. I know that Hugh Jackman is popular now again because he announced that he's coming back as Wolverine with Ryan Reynolds doing Deadpool. I've never seen a Marvel film. I've nothing against. I'm not going out flying the flag being like, I've never seen a Marvel film, I'm so cool. I have no interest in them whatsoever. And I saw one Batman. I don't know if that's Marvel, if that's DC, if that's not even either of them, but it fits in the same kind of bubble in my head. And I saw one Batman, and it was against my will. I had just broken up with my girlfriend the day before, or she broke it up with me rather, so I was the one who was like, oh, lads, friends, I could do with your friendship now. And my friend Darren said, well, I'm going to go see the new Batman tomorrow. If you want to hang out, you're going to have to buy a ticket and sit quietly next to me for 3 hours. I'm like, oh, you're a good friend. You're always there when I need you, mate. But I went and watched it, and I actually really enjoyed it. But, like, never went to see any other Batmans or any other films of that genre. So I just, they seem like a lot of effort. Crossover shit, I can't. I'm just watching reruns of Frasier. I know who's going to pop up. I know who's not going to pop up. I know where we're going. I can't be learning new people and their special powers and stuff. But, so I know Hugh Jackman's a bit popular for that. But me and my girlfriend went to The Greatest Showman on a rooftop outdoor cinema in Lanzarote. And she loves musicals. And she was playing all the songs and going, we're going to this. I'm like, I don't think you have a choice in film. It was the only night we could go. I was like, all right, I'll go to this. I like the beers. I like the hot dogs and the popcorn. And you get a little blanket and the moon and all that bollocks. And I just watched the film. And we left. And we're not talking to each other as we're walking out. And she's just kind of looking at me being like, he's very quiet. You hated that film. And I don't know what I said to her, but I definitely know what I felt. And what I felt was, oh my God, my life has transformed. I love musicals. But in the same way that I love Batman, I never went out and watched a musical then. We've since, I think, watched two musicals. One of them was a birthday present to her, a live stage show of Matilda. And the other one was Les Mis. And even then, I did bits of Les Mis in a school play when I was a teenager. So because I knew a little bit of it, I was able to start. Otherwise, I was like, we're going to watch old people sing about old times for ages and they're all sad. It's a lot of effort. I find it very hard to start new things. But yeah, I even went to see Hugh Jackman in concert performing the songs from the musicals. And for someone who's seen two musicals ever, but yet paid to see one of the stars of one of the musicals sing songs, technically from both of the musicals. Yeah? Well, not Matilda. I would go see a live thing of Matilda. Wait, we did go see a live thing of Matilda. I go see Tim Minchin do Matilda stuff. Good boy, Tim Minchin. He'd be a great guest in this podcast, wouldn't he? He'd be funny and charming, and I think I'd fall in love with his eyes. Let's see. Who else was born? Giuseppe Lanzone, an American rower. Never heard of him. Conrad Smith, sounds like a name I know, but no, born in the 80s. Carlton Cole, English footballer, know him. October 12th is a shit day, man. In 2004, Darcy Lynn, an American ventriloquist, was born. Who was born in 2004? Has a job as a ventriloquist and a page on Wikipedia. What age does that make you? 17. A 17 ventriloquist from Oklahoma has a Wikipedia page. Is it? Are they going to be dead as well? Is that what the whole thing is here? Characters. A bunny. A Motown mouse. An old lady. A cowgirl. A duck. A fox. And a orangutan and a bird. Filmography. There's about 20 films here. This is wild. In Scooby-Doo and all that. America's Got Talent. Oh, see, there you go. America's Got Talent. Excuse me for coughing. I'm not going to edit it out because it matches with the video. And I'm not editing, chopping up the video. I have a really bad cough. Now that I've mentioned it, it's going to be... happening all the time. I've gone off of the births, and what's next is the deaths. I think we just have to embrace death and just hopefully not get tragic ones. I love here that they say pre-1600 deaths, and they've got, Demosthenes? Somebody will be knowing how to pronounce that. But it's like, oh, they died in October 12th, 1322. No, they died October 12th, 322. Now I'm calling bullshit on that. How are they telling us that 1700 years ago today, is that right? Yeah, 1700 years ago today, they're telling us someone died. You don't know if they died on October 12th or if they died 6 years later. And do you know what? Even if they did die 6 years later, that'd be a pretty good way of guessing. There's no records from 322. BC! Hold on a second. So that's 2022 plus 300. You're telling me you know the exact date that somebody died. Let me see if I can do my maths here. 2,344 years ago. And you're going to say they died in the 24-hour span of October 12th. And yet it happened 2,300 years ago. That is bullshit. It's not like there's a... We found their gravestone. Their gravestone is under the ground. It doesn't exist. Any famous... I'm getting really angry at this. This is a welcoming way to start a podcast. Any famous people die that we're aware of? In 1991, Regis Toomey? Died? No? Anybody? Nancy Spungen? No, lads, I think we can declare October 12th pretty shit day. I think if this podcast is a success, it should go on the Wikipedia page because fuck all else happened. Right, holidays... Free Thought Day. What? Free Thought Day. These days, they'd be like, oh, it's National Happy Blue Chicken Day. I'm like, nah, get away from it. Because I'm pretty sure it's like, oh, National Cat Day 6 times a year. And that's the only one I'll allow. Because it's National Cat Day every single day. It's Children's Day in Brazil. Children's Day. Every other day of the year. Fuck them. But today, they have their day. Fiesta Nacional de España. Feast of Life of Aleister Crowley. Celebrated as Crowleymas in Thelma? Oh, it's a cult. A religious cult. Aleister Crowley. Died in 1947. All right, buddy. He was buried in Hampton, New Jersey. Born in England. Here, mate. What are you doing travelling across the world in the 1800s? I'm losing the plot here. I realise that every single week I just basically talk until I get a bit of self-awareness and go, I'm losing the plot. Today's guest is Paul Smith. If you're having fun, go to @myfirstgigpod, wherever you like your social medias, and tell me that I did a good job. Rate, review. This podcast is powered by Acast. If you rate it on Acast, I'll love you. If you decide to rate it on Spotify or Apple Podcasts instead, that's alright. Every review helps, every listen is appreciated. Tell your friends if they like Scousers or Hot Water Comedy Clips to listen to this. But I won't bore you anymore. We start talking. So as I said, it was recorded in 2020, and there was logos around at the time celebrating the 10 years of Hot Water Comedy Club in Liverpool. So we begin in progress talking about that. I think that's all for now, guys. Do you have a nice drink? Get a cold drink. Get some ice. Get a straw. Take a little sip. Oh, that's nice. Do you feel a bit of sweat going down your head? Yeah, that's okay. I'd be nervous too. But nerves, when conditioned, our excitement is... Jesus. Shut up, Dwayne. You guys relax. Sit back. Enjoy my first gig. I'll go away, but I'll be there. Enjoy my first gig with Paul Smith.
10 years in April, yeah. 10 years.
How early into the process did you get involved?
I think I was there, like, 3 shows in, I was there. Second show, maybe even. Second show, I think.
Wow. Did you know the guys, or is that just being local?
No,
or?
And I'd stopped doing comedy for like a year. It was a complete fluke that I ended up landing on that gig. Because a guy who, weirdly, the guy who's doing me tour support tonight, a good mate of mine, Phil Chapman, I'd fell out of love with comedy a little bit. I'd had a bit of a bad run, and I stopped for like a year. I got a job, and I bumped into him, and he was like, how come you've stopped? And we had a little chat about it, and he made me book in for this open mic night called Hot Water Comedy, which I'd never heard about. Even like, does a new one start to just book in? And I was like, and I just did it to appease him. I never even intended on doing it. And then it came round and I forgot to pull it. And I was at a barbecue and I had a couple of... I was just drinking beer in my garden with my mate. We had these little barbecue trays out from Asda. I was like, shit, I forgot to pull this gig. And he was like, just go and do it. And I was like, I don't want to. He's like, come on, it'll be a laugh. So it turns up and I'm pissed. I've got a Superman t-shirt and shorts on and flip-flops. And walks in. And at that time, they had another guy emceeing, and another mate of mine, Adam Staunton, another Liverpool act. He was talking to the lads and he said, because I'd been established, I'd been a weekend comedian before I stopped. And he was like, he's a pro act. You'd best put him on last. And I was like, so they did. They put me on last, and I was waiting for it to come about. I was getting more and more drunk. I got told to shut up twice. It's bad, like just talking at the back of the gig, which is so unprofessional. And then I got on, and I went to start doing my set, and I just couldn't remember it. Just literally, I got into this bit, and I was like, I don't know what I'm saying here. So I just had to rely on crowd work, but nobody, because it was an open mic night. No one had really done crowd work, and the MC they had at that time, he was fairly new and he hadn't done really any crowd work. So I just started bouncing off the crowd and they loved it. So the guy said, do you want to come back and host another one? They'd booked another 5 shows in. There was another 4 guys MCing, and he gave me one of them to MC, and I was like, yeah, okay, I'll come down. So Sunday night, I'll keep me hand in. And then another guy dropped out, so I ended up doing that one. And then I ended up going on the next time, just kept going down. And then after that, he just gave me the rest of them. And I've always emceed it ever since.
If I had to go back, right back, and ask you what your first memory of comedy is.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be stand-up necessarily, but what comes to mind when you think of your first memory?
Honestly, I've had a good think about this, because you get asked that question quite a bit as a comedian, and I never used to be able to answer it, but I had a good think about it. Oh, and I think I used to watch Dave Allen with my dad. Years and years back, and I think weirdly because I've gone back and watched them since, and I think if anyone has influenced my style of comedy, it's him. It's because my actual style of the material that I use, if I use material, is really long form stories. Like my show tonight, it's got 3 bits in it and it's 1 hour and 10, the actual show. One of the bits is, I think it's like 35 minutes long. It's one story. And obviously there's a sides and it comes away and zigs in and out. But like, I think watching the way Dave Allen worked, he was a lot like that. He told these really like long form detailed stories. And I think my earliest memory is watching his show and watching his like monologues where he was sat in the chair just telling these stories. And at the time, you don't even know that stand up. But yeah, I think that would be Dave Allen probably.
And nice Irish guy, and here we are.
Yeah.
If I had to then switch it to experiencing live comedy, sitting in a crowd, do you remember your first time going to a show?
Yeah, I do. It was at it was Rawhide at the Royal Court Theatre in Liverpool. I won the tickets from the radio. And I turned up in an orange jumper and got sat at the front, which is terrible. Ginger guy in a front row in an orange. I mean, I would have a field day with that now. And Chris Cairns, who was MCing, had an absolute field day with me. Just terrorized me all night. But I thought it was great. It was I found it really funny. And I got kind of hooked on it. I used to go quite a bit to Rawhide.
Do you remember some of the acts you would have seen in those early days?
Yeah, it was like Chris. They had regular MCs. So they had Chris Cairns, R. David, Brendan, Brendan Riley, and then some of the acts. I think the first acts who I saw, Phil Nichol, Duncan Oakley, Jason John Whitehead, Martin Moore. I remember Martin Moore getting off the stage and lap dancing on me. I don't know if you know Martin Moore, but he's a big guy and he's like a biker, a big Northern Irish guy, and he's a big biker dude, looks like a biker anyway. And he took his top off and lap danced on me. It's quite the memory. I'm trying to think who else would have been on now. The ones Kerry Marks as well. They had good comedians on Royal because it paid well and it was in a big theatre. You used to get quite a lot of really, really good acts down. I remember crying at Phil Nichol. But I used to watch the compares because they were Scouse compares, and I couldn't figure out how they did it. Because you're watching them, how can you make that up on the spot?
Mm.
And obviously there's tricks and stuff to it now, but at the time, it's a magic trick. And at the time, you're oh my God, it's incredible.
And what gave you the idea then to go from the audience to the stage?
I was a graphic designer at the time, and I was quite shy. And I was going through this... I was reading self-help books and trying to get more confidence in myself. When I say shy, I've never been wasn't that I couldn't speak or anything like that. It was just if in any new situation, I'd be the quiet one. I still am to an extent. If you come out on a night out, if you come out for a pint later with me, I'm not the loudest person there or anything like that. I'm not not the way I am on stage. People get disappointed with that sometimes. I'm more of an observer. I was sat in work and I used to get emails from the comedy club, obviously, because I used to go there. So I was on the mailing list, tell me about shows and stuff. And it said, do you think you're funny? Do you want to try stand-up comedy? And I was sat in work. I used to work in an office. There was three of us around this little table. We used to work on the design stuff for the printers. And I was I could do that, just joking about. And they were you're not funny. And I was you know. So I signed up for it. Just through sheer stubbornness, because I thought if I can do that, I can do anything. I had no intention of it being a job. And I'll be honest with you, when I signed up, I was oh my God, what am I doing? But I forced myself because I just thought, okay, I'm going to do it. It'll be a mate. It's the equivalent to doing a bungee jump or a skydive or something. So I thought, if I tell everyone I'm doing it, then I can't back out of it, because otherwise I'll just back out. So I told everyone. My mum was you're crazy. You're not funny. Everyone said this. I was oh God. So we did a 4-week comedy course. We used to go on a Tuesday night. And we'd have to turn up with material and we'd work through it in this little room above the Royal Court, this little tiny room. There was six of us on the course. And Chris Cairns and Steph Davis would give us feedback and we'd go away. And then, after the 4 weeks, turned up at the Royal Court, it was 300 people in.
So this is the theatre you were going to watch shows in?
So, yeah, and I remember waiting at the side, and I used to still do it to this day. I've got this, you won't be able to see it if you're listening to this, but I've got this weird nervous tick of tapping my fingertips against my thumb. I was pacing up and down. Felt like I was going to have an anxiety attack. I was they're calm down enough. But I still do this now, and I'll do this before the show tonight. I'll pace up and down. I'll even I'll shout. It's a visceral, and I've come to see it as a good thing. I get kind of work. It was all day then, but now it's maybe 10 minutes before the show. I'll purposely walk up and down. I'll get that energy up because I felt it's a good thing. It converts as soon as you walk out. It's And I didn't know this at the time because I was like, I felt like I was going to die. And they were like, calm down. But something in me knew that I needed this. I didn't want to calm down because you don't want to walk out there completely relaxed. And be like, oh, yeah. Like, I didn't want to be that guy. So I was like, I need to be fired up for it. I need to be ready. So I'm stood at the side. And as soon as he announced my name, I walked out, had my hands up, and I got that cheer. And I said my opening line, and I got a laugh, and it just all those nerves just washed away. And I was like, I was just in the moment then. And it's for anyone who hasn't done it, if you ever have that experience, it's massively addictive.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Obviously, the course now kind of points in the direction of like, right, here's your gig, here's what, you know, how many weeks did you say, 4 weeks was it?
Yeah.
4 weeks. So obviously, did they like, because a lot of people who I've spoken to have gone through courses.
Yeah.
And there's some who like, there's just one guy who tells you this is how stand-up is done. There's other people who just go, right, I'll tell you if this is shit or not. Like, how did the lads do it with you?
That's kind of what happened. I've taught a few comedy courses, and when I've taught them, I've been very clear in that I don't think you can teach stand-up comedy. And I know that's a weird thing to say if someone's paid you to teach them stand-up comedy. But, like, you can't teach stand-up comedy because it's like trying to teach someone to be a surgeon. Do you know what I mean? You can't teach someone to be a surgeon. You can teach them the theory of being a surgeon, but they have to practice. You have to have experience to be good at, to be a good stand-up comedian. And that's... I think that's the misconception of people who go on a stand-up comedy course are expecting to come out being good at stand-up comedy. Like, you would come out of a English degree knowing a lot about English, well, being good at English. You can't. It's not a theoretical thing. It's a practical skill, being a stand-up comedian. So I don't think you can teach it, but what you can do, and what I used to do, is just, you can get rid of about 6 months worth of stupid mistakes that literally every person makes. And I know this from hosting a new act night over and over again. Silly little things like not taking the mic out of the mic stand and think like, or and like leaving the mic stand in front of you, or like standing right at the back of the stage, or like just staring at your feet, and just ridiculous body language problems, or like a lot of, like, I would never tell people what to say, but I would sometimes go, have a good think about that, because this is the tension it's going to create, because it's all tension and release, really. So like, if someone comes in and they're gonna, a lot of younger guys tend to come in and they're trying to be shocking and trying to be, which is totally fine, it's a way to do it, and there's a lot of good comedians who work with that, but they all mistake it for being like, just be shocking, just say the most horrifically offensive thing. And I'm like, if you want to say that, you can say it. But what's going to happen is you're just creating tension there, and you're not releasing it with anything clever or any kind of alternate perspective or anything like that. So I would do things like that. And that's kind of what they did for us. They were like, you went in and you'd go through your stuff, and you just, it's more of a like, it's a safety net, really, because you've got this support network, and you go in and it's not the first time you've tried it, and you're in a kind of safe space where it's still a little bit nerve-wracking, but like, you go in and you try your material out, and if it gets a laugh, then you kind of know. That's the only real way of knowing about stand-up comedy, is getting up in front of someone and saying it in that kind of situation. And if you can do it in that little room, it's much easier in front of 300 people. I always say this to people. It's like, people say, God, didn't you get nervous doing an arena with like 7,000-8,000 people in there? I'm like, no, because once you get above 100 people, really, it's just a sea of people in it. Do you know what I mean? You can't really focus on anyone's face. If you've got 10 people in the room, you can see there. You know there. You while you're talking, you register every one of their faces because your brain can register that many people. So you're just looking at them all, and then when one's not laughing, it becomes a fucking issue. But yeah, so I've lost my train of thought there. What was I saying?
We were speaking about how, like, whether they guided you or instructed you.
Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of what they did, is that you go in and you do your stuff, and if it got a laugh, they would kind of try and edge you towards this and that. But like, yeah, they were very laid back with it. It's there's not much you can do. It's more of a confidence thing. Those things, like a public speaking course, it's just kind of going. It's someone reassuring you that you're not shit. And if you are shit, then it's a bit of an issue. But like, because that has happened sometimes. Like when I was doing the comedy courses, you get some people who turn up and they just think they know everything, and you're like, oh god, it's gonna be a nightmare. But yeah, they just reassured me that the material wasn't terrible, and then it gave me a little bit of confidence to go, okay, well, I feel like at least I know what I'm gonna say, and I know how to prepare for this, and I know what my first joke is. And then it'll just all flow on from there.
Do you? How long was your set?
It was supposed to be 7. I did 12,
of course,
which is 10. That's because you don't factor in. I mean, because people were laughing, and you never factor it in when you're practicing. Like, you don't factor in how much you slow. You don't factor. I always used to say this when I was teaching the comedy course. Well, factor in how much. If you're enjoying yourself, some reason, and I've seen this happen so many times, like people are nervous in the course and like when they're practicing, and you're like, oh god, and you're rushing through it in your head because you want to get to the end because you want to know that you remember it all. But when you're in the moment and you're actually doing it and it's getting laughs, you're enjoying it so much that your pacing just corrects itself. Everything just kind of settles itself down. So everything just becomes longer, and then you add those laughs in, everything just extends out. So really, like, if you've practiced a 7 minute, it's probably closer to 10. So we did 12 minutes of, yeah, and it went well, went very well.
So obviously you had no problem writing material, but how did you go about actually doing that, you know, having never done it before? Where did you kind of draw inspiration from? Or
My first stuff, I did have a problem writing it, because the first stuff, it was so, I mean, you wouldn't recognize it to what I do now. It's completely different to what I do now. My first set was, I started off with a load of ginger jokes because I was terrified of people heckling me. So I thought, I'd get all that out the way, then you can't heckle me, which is standard. Like, it's when you're a new act, a lot of new acts do it. You go for the first thing you go for is how you look, or like if you've got a very strong accent, you go for your accent or something about yourself that really stands out. And I think that's not a bad thing to do. I had a load of ginger jokes, and then I had some mad material about me and a Polish guy from my school who we were best mates, and we formed a crime fighting duo. And we used to use puns to catch criminals. It was ridiculous. I would never, like, it was so bad. I don't know how I got away with it.
Was it born out of the truth?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I just literally made it up because
day one you're creating these stories.
I wasn't that confident to talk now. A lot of my stuff is very close to reality. Exaggerated reality, but it's very close to reality. But back then, and for the first couple of years, up until I stopped, it was just this whimsical. As I said before, I was trying to write for this. It was almost a character. It was a really like self-deprecating. I made myself look a lot younger, I went to effort to make myself look innocent and like a bit daft, and it was a completely different character. Yeah, I worked a lot with puns and stuff. It wasn't good. Well, it was. It went well, but it wasn't the same.
You already said that you told everybody you were going to do it.
Yeah.
So it's not like you went in secretly or not. So in the lead up to it, how is it? How were you feeling in the lead up to it? You know, if people were asking about it, or
I was terrified. Yeah, I was really, like, I remember being terrified on the day. I remember being nervous for about 2 days before, if it's like sick nervous. And I don't think there's any way around that. You're gonna be nervous if you care about it. You're gonna be nervous about it. If you're gonna do it, you're gonna have those nerves. And again, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's your body's like defense mechanism against like looking like an idiot, isn't it? Which is like just anxiety about that, and it's a primal thing that you can't really get rid of. And over time, you just become more and more confident that you're not going to make an idiot of yourself. There's still an element of it. But yeah, you just get more and more confident. When you've never done it, it's just fear of the unknown as well, isn't it? You're just like, I might die on my ass. Yeah, and that seems like the idea of dying on your ass seems like the worst thing in absolute, like it would literally kill you. And it, when it happens, which it inevitably happens to everyone, it doesn't, does it? Just like, it just doesn't kill you. So you're like, you walk off and you go, although that was horrible, I'm not that scared of that anymore. So, yeah.
Did you go to work that day? Like, was it a normal day?
Yeah, I went to work that day. I didn't go to work the next day. Because I got a bit drunk after it. I took the next day off just so I could get drunk either way. But yeah, I remember not being able to sleep then after it as well. Just like lying in my bed, just staring at my ceiling because you're just buzzing off it. I still get that now though. Like, I struggle to sleep after gigs. I think everyone's the same.
Sticking with that first day, you know, you're kind of, say now you're coming to the end of the day, you're finishing up work. It's probably what, like 7-8 o'clock, you're heading down there.
Yeah, well, I think we had to get there. They let me off work early. We had to get there for like a run through at like 5. And then we all had a little run through and then they started letting people in at like 7. So we were there for a few hours before it as well, which is a bit
daunting.
Yeah, a little bit daunting. Like, it's waiting around, your energy, like, your energy can get a little bit dissipated because you're kind of, you're in the room, so you've worked up for it, but then you're getting worked up for it and it happens to kind of calm down again. It's fight or flight. Your adrenaline keeps spiking and it's tiring doing that.
Do you remember the format of the show?
Yeah, it was just, I think there was six of us on, so it was three and then three, I think.
And where were you placed?
I think I was fifth.
So you've got to wait quite a lot of the night. Well, how was it watching some of the other acts that you've been in the course with?
It was good because they were all doing well, so it was fine. And they were all doing well, and a couple of them I'd be like, okay, well, not to be honest, but I've been looking at going, okay, well, if that's doing all right, I'll be all right. like, not to sound horrible, but like, yeah, everyone was doing well and the crowd seemed really supportive. So I was like, I felt like it was going to be all right. But again, there's always a little bit of doubt in your mind where you're like, oh God.
So the second half comes, MC goes up, he introduces the fourth act.
Yeah.
Now you know.
I'm next.
You're next. How are those next 7 minutes before you have to go on stage?
They were terrified. I was trying not to listen to what he was saying because I was also trying to think of what I was going to say, and I didn't want that to, because I felt like his words were pushing my words out of my brain. So I'm like, I'm there, and as I said, I was pacing up and down, I'm tapping my fingers together, I'm trying to keep the energy up, and I'm just trying to not run away basically. And it was the moments where it was more when the compere went back on. Like when Chris went back on and he come off and he was like, oh, that was amazing. And I'm kind of congratulating him, but in my head thinking, okay, I'm going now. And it's like hanging over the edge of the roller coaster, that, isn't it? You're like, he's going to say my name in a second. This has gone too far now. I'm going to walk out on that stage. And you're like, am I even going to walk out? I don't even know what's going to happen. And then he said my name. And then,
do you remember your opening joke?
Yeah.
Mind sharing it?
Yeah, it was terrible. The opening joke was, hello Royal Court Theatre. I don't know if you can recognise, I'm Paul, sorry. Yeah, hello Royal Court Theatre, I'm Paul. I don't know if you can tell under these lights, but I am the G word. Gorgeous. And I pointed to one in the front row and I got a big laugh the first night. I sit after to a friendly audience, that's a funny joke. To every audience, that is not a good joke.
Well, the reason I always ask people's first jokes is I like to remind them, like, that's where all of this started.
Yeah.
So memories of the set that night.
Yeah, that was the first joke I had, was that. And then I think I went from that to I Am Ginger. What was it? Fuck, I can never remember. I was trying to remember this and I can never remember. I had a whole list of like, I am ginger. I think that's why I'd be good at this job, because like, as a ginger person, one of the things people are scared of about being a comedian is getting heckled, and I get heckled in the street. Like, people say redhead, ginger pubes, ginger tosses, ginger wing, copper wire, copper wallets, copper zone, sun dodger, Duracell, rusty nuts, Rusty Bollocks, Rusty Lee, someone went with the other week. She's black, that doesn't even make sense. Cara Top, oh, lucky Nits having a bonfire. And someone said, oh, lucky Nits having a bonfire. And she was, I mean, which is clever, but fucking hell, fuck that up. what was it? It was something like, but you got to respect that level of creativity from a 6-year-old girl. Or something like that. And it went well. I mean, it's not good comedy. it's list making. And if you say something quick, some comedians who do this, if you get out there and say something quick, if you there's a comedic trick of just going on and saying, if you say something quickly enough and it's impressive, you will get a round of applause.
It's the culmination of the yeah, list, isn't yeah, it? Yeah. So it went well, though. You were happy with it?
It went very well, yeah. It went a lot better than I expected. I think I probably did the best on the night. And like the club were really happy with it, so they gave me a couple more gigs after it. I think they put me forward for the Leicester Mercury Comedian of the Year competition on the back of that, which is mad because I'd done like at that point when that came around, because I did my first gig in the December, and that was in the February, I think. So by that point I'd done like 5 gigs.
Brand new, like.
Yeah, and I was in this big comedy competition.
Was it your intention to keep on going? Because you said it was something like a skydive or something, like, you know.
Before I went out, no. After I came off, I was like, I'm definitely doing that again. I wanted to do it again straight away. So yeah, after that I was kind of hooked and I knew I wouldn't stop. And I think deep down, it's something I had always wanted to do. But yeah, I think I was just in my head, I psychologically said to myself, oh, it's just this and that, because it just made it easier psychologically. Because if I was like, if I put that pressure on myself, I think that was a mistake I made after it, though, because once I did put the pressure on myself, I go, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do with my life. I'm going to be a professional stand-up comedian, and I'm going to get on telly, and I'm going to do all this stuff. That put a lot of pressure on it. I stopped enjoying it progressively over time, because I was doing well and I got pushed forward quite a bit and I got some good opportunities and I just wasn't ready for them and I messed them up, and then yeah, they got inside my own head there. But yeah,
when you say that, you know, in your head somewhere, this is something you always wanted to do, like, that's probably then what made you, when you see this email and it says, are you funny?
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't have said that out loud, oh, I can do this,
yeah,
unless you knew that was something you wanted to do.
Yeah.
So you were almost asking, almost like,
yeah, yeah,
encouragement, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, probably. Which,
do you see it as a benefit, doing your first gig in the theatre in front of 300 people? Or, like, are you happy it went that way?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's a lovely place to start. As I said, doing a gig in front of 300 people, one is... the laugh you get's incredible. It's just it's a percentage game, isn't it? If you can make half of 300 people laugh, it's a big laugh. If you make half of 6 people laugh, it's not a big laugh. So, like, yeah, some people have had to start in rooms above pubs with like 10 people in, but then downside to it is it that you get a bit spoiled in the fact that, because I say this to people who do Hot Water for the first time, because the room of Hot Water that I MC all the time, it's incredible. It's an amazing room and it's full. It's like 200 odd people in, and it's just it holds the atmosphere perfectly. And you get on stage and all the setup's perfect, the sound's perfect, the lighting's perfect, and you get up there and do your first gig, and you're like, that's incredible. But then I always try and prepare people for the fact that that's not how the comedy circuit is. So like, I got a bit of a rude awakening when I did make third and fourth gigs, and they were in like rooms above pubs or working men's clubs or like just like a corner of a bar where half the people aren't even bothered that the show's on, and you've got to kind of like fight for people's attention. Yeah, so it's pros and cons to it.
So it's probably encouraged you to keep going anyway.
Definitely. Yeah, just the buzz of it, just the sheer buzz of it alone meant that kept me going.
If I can go back to that moment then, right before the MC calls your name, you know, if you're pacing up and back and forth, if you today, before you do this show, could go back and have a little word with Paul right before you went out doing that first gig, what do you think you today would say?
I don't know. I was like, yeah, that's an interesting question, because I'm a bit weird with stuff like I'd want to say it's going to be fine. Like, you're going to end up selling theatres out. It's going to be amazing. But, like, then you feel like if you do that, then is he going to get a bit of hubris and be like, well, I'm going to smash it, so I might as well not work as hard? Or it's just, I wouldn't change anything, to be honest. Like, I've had bad times in comedy and I've had dead good times, and I feel like it was all necessary to get to where I am now. So, and I'm very happy where I am now. I feel blessed. I feel really lucky. I feel like I've had a lot of good opportunities, and I've been lucky enough to meet a lot of really clever people who have kind of allowed me to just do what I think every comedian wants to do, really, is just, like, be able to tour and just get out there and play to an audience who wants to see you. That's really it, isn't it? Like, it's just, I mean, it's all well and good saying you want to be on TV and do all that, but, like, really, you want to be doing live stand-up. I think that's, for me anyway, I think that's what most comedians want to be doing. You want to be in front of an audience who wants to watch you do stand-up. And I'm blessed enough to be able to do that. Yeah, so I wouldn't go back and change anything. Like, I wouldn't tell them. I'd just say, stop being a pussy.
Keep it simple.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, look, Paul, thanks for chatting your first gig tonight.
No worries. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Diddle-loom, boom, boom. Another one bites the dust. And another one does. Another one does. And another one bites the dust. Hey, I'm going to get you two. Another one bites the dust. There. That's two bad intros and outros of songs. Hope you enjoyed the podcast, Paul Smith. Yeah, fun episode. Like, imagine doing your first gig in a theatre. I'd be shitting it. I did it in a recreational room of a college. And wasn't fun. No, it was fun. What am I talking about? Everything's a downer. God, I record all of these very late at night, like post midnight, and I don't think it's good for my brain or my output that I'm like, all right, guys, everything's shite. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Make sure to subscribe on Patreon, because I really want to get into double digits. Oh, let a secret slip there. Would you want to be part of the small crew? It's at the point now where I can afford to fly you all to Dublin and just give you a hug and then fly you right back. I would bring you to my house, but it's the air coach that's actually, the coach that goes from the airport to Dublin is the expensive thing. The flights are a tenner, and I wouldn't pay for the coach for everybody, but we'd have a nice little hug in the airport, and it's a bit crowded at the minute, so we'd probably just put you straight back in the queue to departures. But if you want to join that little crew, go to patreon.com/myfirstgigpod. Follow it at myfirstgigpod. Follow me at Dwayne Dugan, and next week's guest, I think, so is this episode 6? This is what I should know. Paul Smith is season 3, episode 6. So we're at the halfway point of season 3. As I said, we're going to do 12 episodes just to round it off, because season 2 was 2 episodes short, so I want to get up to episode 30 for the end of episode 30 will be the season 3 finale. So we're at the halfway mark, which means, oh, gobble gobble, I've had 6 delicious podcasts. Please, sir, may I have some more? Of course you can. And we're going to kick off the second half, side B of season 3, with the fantastic Lauren Pattison. Lauren Pattison received the nomination for Best Show at the Edinburgh Fringe this year for her show, It's the Way It Is. Oh, do I have anything prepared? It Is What It Is. Look, I could have got the name of the show right the first time, but It Is What It Is. Eh? So check out Lauren Pattison next week. Go back and listen to all the episodes in this series. Flo and Joan, Alison Spittle, Joe Lysett, Rhys James, Mary Beth Barone, and today was Paul Smith. And then go back and listen to all of the old episodes again, because it's now been long enough that if you have actually listened to them, you can listen again, brand new. I love listening to old podcasts that I enjoyed when I forget about them, and then I love then remembering bits, going, oh, they're going to talk about the thing that I like in a second, they're going to talk about the thing that I like, and then they do, I'm like, I like that thing. And I said, that's why I don't watch Marvel films. There's too much new stuff going on. I like listening, watching, and consuming everything I've consumed before. You want me to try new foods? God help you if you even suggest it. Okay? My favourite dinner are the ones that my mother made for me when I was a child. and it's because of all that's all my palate likes, but also it's familiar with to me, guys, and you are familiar to me. I love you all. I'll leave you there. Have a great week. Have a great time. See you another time. I'm Dwayne Dugan for my first gig. Goodbye, good night, and safe travels. What am I talking about? Goodbye, guys.
It's the My First Gig Podcast. Whoa.
You've been listening to the My First Gig with Dwayne Dugan on Acast. Follow online at My First Gig Pod or at Dwayne Dugan. For classic episodes, ad-free, early access, and more, head to myfirstgigpod.com. This is My First Gig with Dwayne Dugan, powered by Acast. Enjoy!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.